Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
It's a beautiful Tuesday, June 25th, 2024. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show, as always, Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning99. Connor, how's it going, brother?
It's beautiful as long as you're inside.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's nice, bright, sunny, but hot, as always. Humid, as always. Yeah, we get that part of it. But we have 2 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open on sort of a day of champions. We had two champions crowned last night, one in college baseball and then one in the NHL, Stanley Cup. I didn't really get to mention it yesterday. But the Panthers, I mean, found a way. They lost three straight games, but Sergei Bobrovsky, their goalie, stood on his head last night and saved his best performance of the year for last, and the Florida Panthers are on top of the NHL World Stanley Cup champs as they win 2-1. So we'll talk about that. Also, we'll get into some Grizzlies draft as the NBA draft starts tomorrow night with round one, and then Thursday it'll continue with round number two. I'm going to put out a poll. Connor will put out a poll on behalf of the Gabe Kuhn Show. There's three real options with where they're at in the first round. You pick at number nine, you trade up, or you trade down. And obviously, you can make some things happen if you trade up. You can make some things happen if you trade out of the first round and find a veteran big or a Jalen Duren, for example. But those are the three options I'm going to give you, and I want to know what you think is the most realistic option moving forward. One thing that I have struggled with, though, Connor, through this entire process is every bit of the rumor mill. When it comes to the Memphis Grizzlies, and, you know, it'll be Mike Scotto and Evan Sidery and Jake Fisher and Mark Stein. They put out all these things on behalf of the Grizzlies. What really I struggle with the most is, when was the last time, if ever, Zach Kleiman and this front office have telegraphed a move that they're going to make? They've never done it. It would be an escape from what they've done in the past.
Drafting Ja. Probably the last time that they did what we knew they would.
Again, so obvious.
Right.
You get number two.
Right.
It was Zion or Ja. You take one of the two, whichever one falls to number two. But outside of that, they have been very unpredictable. And I understand where tomorrow, you're really going to be in suspense. You're going to be really in suspense until about pick number nine. And then you'll see what they do with that pick. If they trade it, if they move back, the whole nine yards. Also, on that same topic, we're going to bring on Parker Fleming from Substack Elitist. He, God love him. God love him, Connor. He put out his NBA draft guide. And when I say NBA draft guide, I really mean it. 66 pages worth of, you know, his draft evals, draft philosophy for the Grizzlies and other teams, advanced analytics and stats. He really went in deep on just about everybody on his big board. I encourage you to go check it out. I know it's 66 pages, but it's very informational and very, very good. We'll talk to him about that and also the Grizzlies' plans heading into tomorrow night. At about 5 o'clock, Christian Fowler will join. No Jeff today. We had to move it around a little bit, but we do have a Tuesday guest in Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media and the On the Bluff podcast with me. Releases every single Tuesday at noon. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. But Christian will join. We'll talk about Antoine Hill Jr., Memphis football, a little bit of Memphis basketball along the way. He will be, again, at 5 o'clock. We'll hop into the Blitz at 5:30. And among other things, we do have EA Sports College Football. We have the top 10 toughest places to play.
I saw.
And I want to see, like, I don't disagree with the list all that much. I think there's some notable omissions, But we'll get to that as we get into the Blitz around 5:30. But I have to open here. College World Series wrapped up last night, and I'm not going to act like I'm a Tennessee fan, but they won 6-5. They won the College World Series. Again, I did not become a fan of Tennessee just because they won the College World Series, their first one ever last night. But I am a fan of Tony Vitello. He's from St. Louis, from my hometown. He went to school about 15 minutes away from where I went to school at DeSmet. It really feels like the city of champions right now is St. Louis. You have Jason Tatum, Matt Tkachuk for the Florida Panthers. I'll get to them in a second. And then Tony Vitello, the head coach of Tennessee, and he went to Mizzou as well. And also, Kirby Connell, the guy who came in and tried to shut it down for Tennessee, that was a glorious mustache. I became a fan of him as well.
Yes.
About 5'10", 200 pounds, and just probably the only guy that went to the College World Series that puts mustache cream in his carry-on.
He looks like his blood is moonshine.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I said last night he's been brewing up a bunch of home beer.
Yeah,
he's been brewing beer at home, saving up for a celebration like this.
Absolutely.
But that was good. Shout out to Vol fans. Yeah, you get what you get. Hey, well done. Well done. And they also won the Rocco's Jello Shot Challenge.
Of course they did. They won every year.
No, well, they don't win every year. But the team who does win the College World Series, because they stay around the longest, does usually win the Rocco's Jello Shot Challenge. Did you take a gander at how many Jello shots were bought by Vol fans?
Ooh, I did not. I did not.
35,337.
35,000?
Yes, 337.
Oh my God.
Jello shots.
Well done.
From that Rocco's Pizzeria and something else. Impressive stuff. A&M, who was obviously the team they beat last night, 31,760. I think that's number 2 and 3 all time at Rocco's.
It's pretty good.
Rocco's, and I think they don't donate half to a children's hospital as well. They do good with it. They do good. They're a food bank, something like that, but they give it back to charity.
I will say, shout out to Tennessee baseball for not allowing A&M to win a championship, because we could not live in a world where Texas A&M has a title. It would have been highly annoying.
Well, I don't know. I think a lot of people in our listening audience will disagree with you there. It was kind of the worst of two evils, I think, for a lot of people in Memphis seeing Tennessee win. But
not David Cobb.
Yeah, David Cobb came in here with his
orange,
with
his head to toe.
Yeah, but he had his Vols baseball jersey on. That's a collector's item. But you're a Vol football guy. Never got to baseball.
I cannot,
or basketball.
I cannot.
At all.
I'm definitely not basketball. I cannot
not
claim baseball. I would be nothing but a bandwagoner if I said I was a baseball fan. When I was actually at UT. To be quite honest, nobody really went to the game. So that's why it is such a big deal, the way that he has turned around that program. It is a big deal, and he does deserve a lot of credit for it, because it's highly impressive. I mean, the videos going around about his first game, the first pitch, it was empty. It was empty. Yep. In the stadium. And now all of a sudden, you have got to kill somebody to find tickets now.
And they were belting out Rocky Top last night.
Yes. I am happy for my Tennessee brethren. I'm happy for them. It has been a very long time since Tennessee.
I can't quite say the same, but shout out.
About.
Well done.
Well done.
Good for you.
Hopefully we can do it in football and I can join the celebration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Also, I do want to say, Tony Vitello, I do like him. I he's a likable guy.
Yeah.
He's very likable. Younger coach, definitely has an edge about him, sticks up for his players, has a personality as well. And then there was a interesting picture that came out with Rick Barnes and Josh Heupel and Tony Vitello. And the question there was, is this the best trio of basketball, baseball, football coaches in America? And I sat there and I thought for a second. I thought on it, and I think yes. And that's a testament to the athletic department of Tennessee, Danny White, what he's built. He's made some great hires.
There were some dark days.
As much as it pains me,
there were
that
dark
is
days
some
with,
great
with
hires.
UT Athletics, yes.
I mean, after the Jeremy Pruitt thing, you wondered if you'd ever surface, get back to where you wanted to go. And Josh Heupel's done a good job there. Rick Barnes, I know you want him to win the big one, get deeper into the tournament, get to a Final Four. But, hey, he still consistently gets you to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight every once in a while. And then Tony Vitello just got you a national championship. And you mentioned before he got there, empty stadium, not a lot of people really rallying around that program. But that's something to chew on. That trio of head coaches is damn good. And then also last night we had the Stanley Cup go final in Game 7. That was a very fun series if you followed along. I know that here in the city of Memphis, not a lot of NHL fans. But the Panthers got over top and saved it for the United States of America. Florida Panthers got over top of the Edmonton Oilers 2-1 in Game 7. They are Stanley Cup champions. And Panthers goalie, Sergei Bobrovsky, he didn't practice leading up to Game 7 because he's been hurt for some time, and he's an all-star goalie. He's phenomenal. He's been great. But he didn't play well in Games 4 through 6. I mean, there was a game where he allowed 8. There was a game where they came out and the Oilers had 3 goals, I believe, in the first period. And he was just not great, but he was awesome last night. He was great. Stood on his head, and he deserves all the credit in the world for saving that performance for last. Now, Connor McDavid on the losing team, don't take a damn thing away from this guy. Good Lord. He won the Conn Smythe, which is, it goes to the best player in the NHL playoffs, even though he was on the losing team. This guy broke Wayne Gretzky's record for assists in one postseason and became the third player with 40-plus points in a playoff year. He had 11 freaking points in the Stanley Cup, and he had 8 in their wins for games 4 through 6. This guy is ridiculous. If he would have won last night, I was, you know, watching PK Subban talk about it on ESPN, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. With the team that surrounds him, yeah, he's got a guy by the name of Leon Draisaitl who didn't play all that well in this series. But he said if he would have won last night, it's just complete immortality. He's still going to go down as a top 5 player of all time, even if he doesn't really win a Stanley Cup, because it's a team game. It's really hard to get over top in the NHL. But Connor McDavid definitely, he's put a stamp on who he is as a player, and he did that throughout these entire playoffs and definitely did it in the Stanley Cup. It was a shame he couldn't come through, but the Florida Panthers were just a better team altogether than the Edmonton Oilers. Now, on to the Grizzlies and the NBA draft coming up tomorrow night. Connor, I want you to go ahead and publish this poll. What do the Grizzlies do, right? And really, there's 3 options that we're looking at with the number 9 pick. You can trade up and go grab Donovan Clingan or whoever your prospect of choice is, Reed Shepard, I don't know. You can stay at number 9. And pick from there, and, you know, the range of outcomes there, your guess is as good as mine. It could be Zach Edey to Devin Carter to, you know, if Dalton Connect fell, that type of thing. Or they could trade down. I personally am in this category of I have no earthly idea what Zach Kleiman and company are thinking, because I think number 9 from the beginning has always been a very, very strange place to fall if you're the Memphis Grizzlies. If you're a top 5 pick, you have your chance at Donovan Clingan to go get your center of the future. You don't have to give up anything for it. It would have been nice. But they land at number 9. You're outside of the range of most of the prospects you seemingly would like. And then I guess there is some opportunity out there to go trade, whether it's up or down, for certain vets, some bigs out there on the open market that could potentially be dangled on the open market. One of those guys is Jalen Duren from the Pistons, if the Pistons decide to pivot from him. Now, I'm going to ask you straight up, Connor, do you have any feel, or are you right there with me on the unknown of trade up, trade down, or stay at number 9?
I, to be quite honest, I don't know. I have no idea. It's, if you made me guess what they're going to do, I think they're going to use the pick to move. I don't think that they're going to stay at number 9. That's my prediction. Like, I don't think it's going to be stay at number 9 and draft at number 9. I would be surprised if it were that. I do believe that they will try to trade up if possible, but I could see them using the pick to go get a center. Like, if it's the Jalen Duren deal, you're probably just not drafting with number nine at all. You're just getting rid of it. You're sending it to Detroit, and you're probably sending Santi with him to get back Jalen
Duren. And I would
Duren.
Put that, if you think that's going to happen, I'd put that in the trade down
right.
category.
Sure.
Yeah. But I think if a guy like Jalen Duren is out there for the taking, that from an athletic fit, from a production fit of what you need him to do within this system, I feel like Jalen Duren fits well. Now, I know there's some defensive inefficiencies or defensive issues with him, but I think getting into this system with the Grizzlies, who are top 10 defense regardless of the situation last year, they played 33 players, they were still a top 10 defense. I think that helps Jalen Duren. And know what also helps Jalen Duren? Playing alongside Jaren Jackson Jr. as a main threat. As a main threat there at the rim to go block shots. I think that would help Jalen Duren as well. But I am completely lost. And I think this adds to the suspense of what's going to happen tomorrow night. We don't even know who's going to be first overall. Alexander Sarr, there's a report that he has denied a workout with the Hawks leading up to the draft. Zachary Risacher's right there. That's sort of the thought process for the Hawks. But Sarr is also a unicorn to a certain extent. He's not like Wimby. He's definitely got some ability, but he's not as polished as Wimby was coming out of the overseas ranks. So this is going to be a very fun one to watch, and I wonder how this all sort of falls. Now, when we look at the Grizzlies, if they were to stay at number nine, I just don't know how many options out there are going to be that sexy for people to look at, right? I guess you theoretically could try to find a developmental prospect, but that doesn't really make sense with the timeline. I know a lot of people in Grizz Twitter and Grizz fandom like Ron Holland, but you have a guy named G.G. Jackson. I don't know if you can really bring those guys along on the same timeline because they're very similar players. Think a guy like Devin Carter, a guy who does everything relatively well, even though he's a little bit undersized, he would make sense. In that spot, if Dalton Connect falls, he would be a solid guy in that spot. Could give you an offensive punch. You would be able to, decide what you're going to do with Luke Kennard if you end up with your hands on a guy like Dalton Connect. But going into tomorrow, this is going to be very telling, in my opinion, of where the Grizzlies are going to head in the 24-25 season. They have to make some moves. They have to go find a big here relatively soon, and we'll have some questions answered by tomorrow night about how they're going to go get that done.
It's a very important day. It's a very important day, and that's why all of these options are present, because I think that all of us understand that the Grizzlies have to make a move, and they have to find a player that can impact winning, whether that's using number nine to trade for that guy, trading up to go get your guy, trading back. All of those things are possible. So I want to ask you, what do you want them to do? What do you think would be the best route for them to go? Do you think it's, if they end up trading up, do you think that that's going to, is that going to give them the best player? Is it going to be using number nine to trade for that player?
With where this draft is, not top heavy at all, but a little bit of depth, right? I think my two best ideas here would be trade up and grab Donovan Klingon if he falls to five or six. See if you can get the Pistons or the Hornets to pick up the phone and you don't have to give all that much to go get Donovan Klingon. Or I think if the Pistons decide to pivot from Jalen Duren, throw Santi Aldama in number nine and see if they say no. I think I want the Grizzlies to come out of tomorrow night with a big that they can sort of latch on to going into the future.
So that's your goal.
That's my goal. Now, other things can happen. If they traded down a few picks outside of the lottery and got Zach Edey or Kellel Ware, I'm not going to be completely beside myself. If they took Zach Edey at nine, I think it's too high, but I could talk myself
into that. I'd talk myself into it. I'd be okay with it.
But I am of the opinion with where this draft is right now and the lack of top-end talent where you're at number nine, I still think you need to go try to address that need, if at all possible, using that number nine pick as a bargaining piece.
Do you think people will be disappointed if they don't walk out of tomorrow's draft with a big man?
I don't necessarily think so. I might be a little bit, but I think most people understand that they're still going to be looking for big men on the open market, even if they draft a guy like Devin Carter, a guy that potentially could help you right now, Dalton Connect, something like that. If you find a guy that can help you right now and then leave the door open to go find a big this offseason, whether it's through trade or through free agency, I still think people can get on board with that. I just am of the opinion there's two guys out there that you have the means to potentially go move for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Donovan Klingon and Jalen Duren. I think they both fit perfectly alongside this Grizzlies core, and certainly alongside Jaren Jackson Jr. That's sort of my thought process. And here's the thing. Depending on who you talk to, you have a completely different thought process on the way this thing's going to shake out because there's so much unknown.
It feels like a shotgun blast. Nobody knows anything. That's kind of what this draft feels like. Is there a player you would be disappointed with them walking away from the draft?
Not particularly. I mean, Ron Holland would be the one at number nine that would definitely...
I would be excited for Holland.
I'd be cautiously optimistic about it. But I just don't know if it makes a whole lot of sense in the Grizzlies' current iteration and what they have going for them. You have a guy in G.G. Jackson here at home.
Yeah.
You have a guy that you just put on contract that's very similar skill set to Ron Holland. And they play similar situations. Now, a lot of people would basically say that you never have enough good wings, scoring wings, guys like that, young wings. But if the Grizzlies want to get into this championship mode and go win now, I think that pick could be used better than going to find a good developmental guy who may be ready in 1 or 2 years like Ron Holland. That would be the one that would peeve me to a certain extent.
The one that would bother me is Cody Williams.
Yes, that too. That too. He's not ready.
He's not ready.
That's another developmental prospect, though. That sort of fits into the same category as Ron Holland, except I think he's lesser. I think he has a way lesser ceiling than Ron Holland, which would definitely peeve
me. I think what we're saying is the goal of tomorrow... You definitely want to find a big if possible. That would be a home run. If you walk out of that draft with Klingon or you know, even if I could talk myself into Edie, but if you get Jalen Duren, all of those things I would thumbs up. You got to find an impact player. If it's not a big, it's got to be a win now player. It can't, in my opinion, be a developmental project. You don't want to get a guy coming in raw. You need somebody that's going to come in that can play defense right now and can have an impact on winning. And you listed off a few of those. Devin Carter is one of them. I know that we're going to talk to him in just a minute, but Parker Fleming's a big fan of Tristan Da Silva. Like, he likes him a whole bunch. You've got to go find those guys that affect winning. That's my goal.
And find a Grizz guy. Find a guy.
Sure.
I mean, don't worry about age. That's not what they do. Find a guy who's just ready to go, who is who you think he's going to be for the most part going into his rookie year. I just think you need to find somebody who can play a role on this team going into next year and sort of get their feet under them relatively quickly.
I'd like to see them grab Isaiah Crawford, too. I know a lot of people are high.
That's sort of the 39 area.
But that would be – I think that he'd be a nice little grab.
Louisiana Tech?
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of a four. Projects as a four for the most part, three or four. So I there's some ideas out there for the second round, but I think most of us are turning our eyes directly to pick number nine, and what the hell are they going to do with that thing? Also in the NBA, before we get to the NBA draft, tomorrow, we had a couple of coaching things yesterday. I'll talk about J.J. Redick in a second. Chris Finch, 4-year extension with the Timberwolves. I think that was fully earned to turn around that team and give them hope. I know Anthony Edwards had a lot of say in that, but they were very close to getting into the Western Conference Finals. They just did not put their best foot forward against the Dallas Mavericks, but they knocked off the defending champs. That earned Chris Finch another 4-year extension. Will he live it out? I don't know. They're going to have to make some moves around the edges because they're going to get very expensive very fast in Minnesota. And then you also have to deal with Mike Conley. How old is he getting? Is he going to start doing a little bit of a downturn? We shall see. But ultimately, Chris Finch, 4-year extension, makes the most sense in the world. Now, J.J. Redick, do we have the clip pulled up? Do we have the clip pulled up? I sent you a clip. Now, it was his opening statement, and he was basically asked about the idea of trying to prove people wrong because, you know, he's been a part of engagement farming. He's been put into this situation by the Lakers where it feels like a little bit of a lose-lose situation. People realize he has a lack of experience and maybe it's not the best way forward for the Lakers. But he was basically asked about what he wants to dispel. What he wants to dispel first and foremost. And here was his answer. It was expletive-laced.
What misconceptions or concerns about you that you've heard in the last few weeks are you the most like looking forward to dispelling when you're the coach?
It's a valid question, and I've certainly heard everything. You know, it's been a really interesting 6 weeks or so, just in terms of you know, being part of the engagement farming industry. You know, it's been really interesting. However, I don't really have a great answer for your question because I really don't give a f-. Like, honestly. I want to coach the Lakers. I want to coach the team. I don't want to dispel anything. I don't. I want to become a great coach in the NBA, and I want to win championships, and I want my players to maximize their careers. That's all I care about.
All right. Well, dropped a couple of F-bombs throughout that. Now, I will say one thing to J.J. Redick. If you really don't give an F, you probably don't drop expletives like that. I'm sure he wants to dispel some of the nonsense that's been said about him, and he's going to have the chance to do that with the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, let me ask you this, Connor, because this has been the big topic of discussion today about that quote in particular. How do you feel? It's sort of a podcast answer, podcast route he took to that answer. Not a normal coach speak, opening presser type deal. I think some people are viewing it negatively. I don't view it in that way. I like coaches that don't mince words. I think we're in an era now where guys use expletives at press conferences constantly, and it's become relatively accepted. I'm not all that worried about his rhetoric around dispelling certain things about him. If he wants to drop an F-bomb, if he feels that strongly about it, go a freaking head. It's an escape from the norm.
I just thought it was a bit performative.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. I'm not going to freak out over the use of the word. I will say maybe don't use it twice. And it is a opening presser, so it's not necessary to use. But it, to me, it came off as him trying to show, like you said, that he doesn't care. But he clearly cares.
He clearly cares.
He hears the noise and everything that's being said. So for me, it just was performative. That's all it felt like to me.
Yeah. I personally like J.J. Redick. I know a lot of people can get...
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sort of sidetracked. He seems to display a little bit of arrogance. He's done that through his Mind the Game podcast and Old Man and the Three, and people can get sidetracked by that. I think he has an opportunity to do some things with the Lakers. I just think that roster needs to get better. But all of the discussion about him and being coach-like, being by the book coach, he doesn't need to be that. He's young. He's only 1 year older than his oldest player. He's 40. LeBron's 39. And also, may I remind you of some of the best coaches that we've ever seen. Especially in this era, Greg Popovich is always very, very crusty toward the media. I know he probably didn't do that in his opening presser, but he's very crusty. And then also Eric Spoelstra, he's not the nicest guy to the media, right? I mean, he's told people they don't know ball at pressers and everything before.
They've earned it, though.
They've earned it. I understand that. But, you know, being crusty toward the media and dropping F-bombs, I'm not really going
to
worry about it. I will base my judgment off of how he coaches the Los Angeles Lakers and nothing more.
It just seemed like to me he was like, what would Jerry West or Pat Riley say right here? And I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. It felt like he was trying to, like I said, it felt like performative to me. So that's why I'm not up in arms about the use of the word. But I was just like, okay.
And part of it, sure. Too, and I already mentioned this, I don't believe his message. I think he does care about what's been said
about
him.
Just say you don't care. I
do believe he cares.
He absolutely
but
cares.
But I will say this. The message itself, I don't mind. It's like I think if you're going to be the best coach for the Los Angeles Lakers, you do have to put all that nonsense aside.
Yeah.
The fact that he's moved to use the F word, though, in that moment, there's going to be moments where a lot more is said about you as the Los Angeles Lakers head coach. That will lead SportsCenter some days. If you lose to the Clippers, it will lead SportsCenter, and they'll talk about your performance and the timeouts you didn't take and your substitution plan and everything else. There's going to be more opportunities to drop those F-bombs. I think you wasted them in your first opening presser before you've even played games.
I can agree with that.
Yes. So one thing I will say, I do think he will have to get used to the level of scrutiny that comes with that job. Because clearly he's already peeved before coaching a game. When you start coaching games, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And you're going to have to be able to live with that scrutiny day to day from everybody in L.A., from everybody nationally. Stephen A. Smith is going to curse your name sometimes. Shannon Sharp, same thing. You're going to have to get used to that. And it was kind of interesting to see him take that approach day freaking one as soon as he was introduced. But hey, it is what it is. Let's go ahead and grab a break, though, on that note when we come back. Parker Fleming will join the show. He just put out his NBA draft guide for 2024. It is 66 pages. We're going to try to break down just about every page of that thing and also talk about the Grizzlies' plans going into tomorrow night. That's next. Parker, what's the word, brother? How are you?
Gabe, man, you're a great guy, too. I appreciate you having me on the show. I'm doing great. Just on my way home. Got my dog in the car, too, and yes, draft eve. I'm refreshing X, trying to find the latest intel, and everything's gotten a little too quiet. So, but you know, I'm doing good.
Yeah, now, latest intel, though, I brought this up with Connor off the top of the show. When it comes to the Grizzlies getting intel, like, is that sort of in one ear, out the other when it comes to, like, what they're going to do with number 9 and what you see from Mark Stein and Sam Amick and, you know, Mike Scotto and all these guys out there, Evan Sidery, Jake Fisher. Like, it just feels like Zach Kleiman has never really telegraphed anything that he's done around the NBA draft, besides Ja Morant, which was so obvious.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's one of those things where it's the Grizzlies need a center. They've called about trading up. They must want Donovan Clingan. Or this center might hit the trade market. The Grizzlies are going to be one of the teams interested. It's because they need a center. Like, that's why it feels like the Grizzlies are in the rumor mills a little bit more often this year than most. It's because everyone's trying to telegraph which center they're trying to go for.
Yes.
It might end up being Ryan. It might be Donovan Clingan. It might be Brooke Lopez. It might be Walker Kessler. Like, yep. We don't know who it is. Like, I think you're right. Like, I don't think he's telegraphing a move, but I think it's more people are trying to piece intel together to see if they can come up with something,
yeah,
in my opinion.
And it's a crazy amount of variance depending on who you talk to, especially at the top of the draft. Now, I want to get into this. You put out your NBA draft guide, and it is 66 pages worth of content. How long did that take? How much work went into it?
Yeah, so I started around March Madness. So I was being an absolute sicko, and instead of watching, I mean, I would end up watching the March Madness games I wanted to watch in a later date for future studies, because I also wanted to see how players performed in postseason situations. But like at the like when all the craziness was going down, all the upsets were going down, I was watching Isaiah Coyer and Khalil Ware tape.
Yeah.
So, like, I was watching G League Ignite tape, and then once the season ended, I kind of ramped up. The Grizzly season ended, I ramped up that activity a little bit more with, you know, watching the UConn guys, watching the Colorado guys, watching international players. So, yeah, so it took about 2.5 months. So, yeah, it was a lot of work. I wouldn't say there was any sleepless nights. I feel like I got some pretty good sleep. I started doing this thing where, like, I would take notes, obviously, game by game, and I'll get my bullet point information for the scouting report, and I would sit there in my notes app, like, between sets at the gym and just, like, knock out, like, a sentence, like, a couple sentences, get back to my set, knock another more out, get back to my set. So, like, it's a very sicko process if I go back and think about it, but it was very fun to go through a dive in on this class and really think about my philosophy when it came to evaluating this class.
Now, Hawks hold the number one pick, and your number one guy on your big board is Alex Saar, and it feels like it's down to Alex Saar or Zachary Risacher. And Saar, you have at number one, Zachary Risacher at 6. Who do you think the pick's going to be for the Hawks? Who do you think they actually take tomorrow night? It's rare where we go into an NBA draft and have no idea, seemingly, who the first team is actually going to select.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Ricochet. So, obviously, I have Ricochet lower than one or two just because I think he's going to be a good 3-and-D player. And I think people are overlooking the fact that there aren't a lot of pure 3-and-D 6'10 wings. Like, there's not. Zachary Ricochet might be that. For me, it's one of those, I just don't see that upside to where, like, he becomes, like, the best player in this class. Where, like, I see it with Saar. I see it with Shepard. I see it with Klingon. I see it with Holland. And I see it with Castle. So that's what went into my ranking of Ricochet at 6. But I think the Hawks are going to pick Ricochet. I think I saw something from Landry Fields' radio interview on X. Mm-hmm. I'll send it to you after this. But so he talked about, like, shooting being a premium,
right,
and the fact that they plan on keeping the number one pick. And if you really think about the team-building construct of things, like, you want 3 6'9", 6'10" guys next to a guy like Trae Young. And you would have that with Ricochet, Jalen Johnson, and Oyeke Okongwu. So I think they ultimately pick Ricochet, whether people agree with it or not. That's the beauty of this draft, is there's a variance of opinions. I've seen maybe 7, 8 probably different number ones that people have in this class. So that's been the fun part of it. And that's what's going to make for a chaotic draft night, just the variance in opinion, not just among, you know, us, like, aspiring scouts or basketball analysts or anything, but also to an NBA draft.
Yeah, and after grinding the tape, I want to ask you your opinion on this sort of thought process. I think most people, a lot of NBA draft analysts have said, you know, the lottery talent is lacking. Like, there's no doubt about it. The top half of this draft, not very fun. But most of them say the depth is on par with normal drafts. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I look at up and down the board, and granted, it could be like some rose-colored glasses because you don't know exactly what they're going to be yet. You're weighing, you know, I talked out of my philosophy that I look at things with a confidence interval of, like, what's my confidence in their ceiling, realistic outcome, and their floor? What's the confidence interval? And, like, there's a lot of dudes that I can see in this draft being in a playoff rotation. Like,
right.
And I even looked at, you know, I looked at picks 21 through 30 in last year's class. And I'm like, this is up to par with that. And, like, I still think some of these guys, like your Saars, your Shepherds, Ricochet, Klingon, like, you can't convince me that it's an absolute no-brainer that they would be picked after Taylor Hendricks, who was a nice pick last year, Bilal Coulibaly, who was, like, the 7th or 8th pick last year. So, like, it's a good class. People just have their opinions on the depth of it because there's not that Wembanyama. There's not a Zion and Ja at the top.
Right.
There's not a Kate Cunningham and a Mobley at the top. That's what it all boils down to. But, yeah, I think this is a good class. It has a lot of guys who I see impacting winning maybe sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and your three questions that you really break down when you're going through the board, how likely is it for them to be in a playoff rotation, talking about each prospect? Can their game scale down now that they're not the guy? And is there a pathway to a breakout? When you talk about those three questions, who jumped off the board for you? Obviously, Alex Saar at number one, but who else do you think fits that mold? This is sort of answering all three questions relatively well.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes down to who answers that question the most, especially among the top guys, I think it's Reed Shepard. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because he's such an outlier. It's like, okay, how can this guy who's 6'2", 6'3", wingspan, about a buck 80, how is this guy a guy that you see in a playoff rotation? And it's the fact that he might be the best shooting prospect to enter the draft since Steph Curry. Like, he shot 50% from three while shooting 51% on pull-up threes. Like, that's insane. I don't think people realize how insane that is. The defensive event creation. And I posted this on X yesterday. I think that Kentucky's three-guard model really diminished Shepard and Dillingham's playmaking in a way where it leaves more questions of, like, can they actually be a lead guard, where that answer might be more of a yes than they realize.
Yeah.
So Reed Shepard, to me, implies that. Cause I see that this path where he breaks out. And, like, I was texting Connor this the other day. It's like, I think there's an outcome that he's somewhere between, like, Mike Conley and Steve Nash. Probably very closer to Mike Conley.
Right.
But, like, if you told me that Reed Shepard breaks out and becomes a star, I wouldn't be surprised.
Right. I hear that. Now, we had a poll that we put out for the first segment when we were talking about the Grizzlies and their plan around the NBA draft. They hold number 9 going into tomorrow night. And the 4 options we put out, stay at number 9, trade up, trade back, or use number 9 to trade for a player, more than likely a big of some sort. We'll see what that looks like. Of those 4 options, I mean, is there one you like more than another?
I lean with trading up because, you know, you're hoping that this is a unique situation and that you're not picking this high until, you know, we're in the 2030s and we're planning, like, Jaw, Jaren, and Dez's jersey retirement. Like, that's what you're hoping for.
Right.
And, you know, I think that this is a unique situation where if there's a guy that you really want, don't wait for the board to settle. Go get him. And Zach Klein has operated under that mindset since he's taken over. The only first-round draft pick that he's ever settled for and let the board work itself out was John Morant. Traded up for Brandon Clark, traded in for Desmond Bain, traded up for Santi Aldama, traded up for Jake LaRavia, traded up for Zaire Williams. Like, you know, 60%.
Yep.
That's still a really good hit rate for trading up. So I veer towards trading up. Now, if there's something where, let's say, the top of the board settles, and let's say the clinging to one is becoming, if it's true, which I see more and more, as there's more information, the clinging to one stuff's getting less true. So, like, let's say it goes clinging, Sar, Shepard, Richache, and the only player that you're talking about trading up for is Stephon Castle, then, like, okay, stay at 9 or trade back.
Yeah.
Go from there. But I think if the board is going how I envision it to go, and I envision it based off of the tea leaves, the intel. And I don't know if you're this much of a sicko, but, like, I don't gamble, but I've been looking at the betting lines, like, twice a day.
Uh-huh.
And it trends in a way where it looks like it's going to be Richache, Sar, Shepard, Castle, Buzelis. If that's the case, you get on the phone with Charlotte about a pick swap situation, because, like, Charlotte's been connected to guys like Dalton Kennett and Cody Williams and or Ron Holland, and those are guys you can get at 9. Mm-hmm. And for a new front office, that's a chance to accumulate another asset. So I lean towards trading up with the fattest asterisk that the guy that you want is falling.
Is that the only guy, though, Donovan Klingon, that you think the trade-up would happen for? Or is there somebody else out there that the Grizzlies would have their eyes on in a trade-up situation if they fell a couple of picks down?
Yeah, I mean, if somehow, some way, Reed Shepard falls
right
past 4, yeah, I think Reed Shepard. But, and frankly, I think the trade up for 3 is to get either Klingon or Shepard. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's for Shepard, because, I mean, Luke Kennard has a team option. As we get closer and closer to that team option, it's not looking like a surefire thing that he's coming back. And what better way to replace Luke Kennard than going to get Reed Shepard, you know?
Yeah.
You shot 50% for 3 in college. So I think if they're trading up, it's for one of those 2 guys. I can't really think of any other player on the board that I'm like, oh, yeah, you have to jump this team. I mean, especially now, too, that Topic's knee injury.
Yes.
I could have seen an argument for Topic.
ACL.
Because as a 6'5 playmaker, 6'5, 6'6 playmaker, but with that ACL, that's a stay away for me.
Yep, I hear that. Now, let's get into real sicko talk. They have 39 and 57 as well,
yeah,
tomorrow. Who are some, like, sleepers that you think the Grizzlies should keep an eye on?
Yeah, so I would frankly keep an eye out on using the 39th pick in some future seconds to trade back into the first round.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think we've talked about this, but it's been out there from Jonathan Ligoni and Zach Lowe that the Grizzlies are one of the teams that like this draft, and you have teams that are trying to trade out of this draft. So, like, what's the likelihood? It's like, hey, you can have 39 at a couple future seconds, and the Grizzlies can get, like, the, hypothetically speaking, like, the 27th pick. Or, like, I saw a report from Christian Clark of Nola News saying that New Orleans may look to trade 21 for future seconds because they don't have any until 2030. Like, trading up to 21 and going to get someone like Baylor Shireman from Creighton. Mm-hmm. For talking about pure 39, Jonathan Mogbo, I watched his film last week. He's a fun player, non-shooter, but very cool handles and passing vision from a 6'7 big. I think he was one of those like late growth spurt JUCO kids. Isaiah Crawford, he fell down the boards at Louisiana Tech because he's torn his ACL twice in college in the same knee. But he shot 40% from three and averaged almost four stocks a game last year. That's really freaking good. I mean, and then it depends also too what they do with that first pick as well. Like, if they get a center, then like I wouldn't mind getting a guy like Jalen Wells from Washington State, really good shooter. Cam Spencer from UConn on a two-way would be fine. I can't really think of any other names without looking at my board. I'm actually going to drop my Grizzlies draft preview tonight on my Substack, so that will have a little bit more as well. But those are some names that immediately pop to mind as sleepers. But maybe in a trade-up situation, though, they can try to get a guy falling, maybe like a Jacoby Waltz or someone like that.
I hear that. Now, yeah. Your last two guys on your big board, last thing I want to talk with Parker Fleming about at Paka_Flocka, Free Grizzly Substat, Sub Sacalitas. Make sure you go subscribe. Your last two guys are David Jones and Bronny James, late second-round guys. You have David Jones at 59 and Bronny James at 60. Let's start with David Jones there. Do you think he'll get drafted? Do you think he'll get drafted when it's all said and done? Or do you think we're going to look at a UDFA possible two-way guy?
I mean, I think ultimately he's going to be a two-way guy. I mean, to me, it's one of those things that I believe in how his game scales a little bit more than others. Because I look at the rebounding numbers, I look at the steal numbers, I look at his defensive activity. Like, yeah, the playmaking is not great, but he's not going to have the ball in his hands that much. Like, if he can just make the most of his touches, like, that'd be great. But also, too, as much as he's just, like, bucket-getting score, he's also a guy that shot 38% from three on catch-and-shoot threes. Like, that's not a bad mark at all.
No.
He didn't measure well at the combine, but, like...
He rebounds his ass off, and he plays big.
Yeah, so, like, I think there's a shot. And that it's just one of those, like... That's more me, like, hey, it's the end of my board. I'm going to call my shot with a couple of my guys. And David Jones is one of them.
Yeah, and then Bronny James, is that more about what you've seen in the rumor mill more than his actual skill set, actually listing him on your big board at number 60? Because that feels like most people, when they're putting their big board and they put their big board up and they throw Bronny James on there, it's just sort of based on intel and the fact that they think he will get drafted and he most likely will get drafted.
Yeah, and, like, I try to, like, for my board, I try to go more.
Did we lose you? We may have lost Parker. We may have lost him. Right when he's going to give. Wait, you there, Parker? We got him?
What's that?
We got you. We lost you there for a second.
Yeah, sorry. Bluetooth issue, yes.
Yes.
From Bronny James, I want to leave it as simple as this. There's not 60 more guys in this draft that are going to get more opportunity to play in the NBA than Bronny James.
Right.
That's kind of where I put it, and that's why I strategically put him at 60, is because there's not 60 more players that will get a chance to be on an NBA roster, like, more than Bronny James.
Yep.
And I after my board, I was like, I really feel bad at leaving off, like, a guy like Jamal Sheed for Bronny James or for David Jones. But, like, with Jamal Sheed, it's like, I don't trust the shooting at his size. I think that's just a very slim margin for error. You know what I mean?
Yep. I hear you. Tell the pup I said hello. I hear the pup in the background. Sounds excited.
Yeah, that's right.
Sounds excited.
Yeah, hey, it's hot outside. Yeah. He's excited for the draft. He's watched a bunch of film with me. So.
Yeah. He's been grinding the tape, too. I like to hear that.
That's right.
But, Parker, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining. We'll do it again soon.
Yes, sir, Gabe. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. That's Parker Fleming at Paka_Flocka. Make sure you go subscribe to his grief-free Grizzly Substack, Sub Sacalitas, and make sure you check out his NBA draft guide. A lot of work went into it, and it's really good work. I mean, the advanced analytics, the idea of having 60 different player evaluations, diving into those advanced analytics. If you are a sicko like Parker, like me, like Connor, make sure you dive into it and check it out.
It's also color-coded.
Yes, it's color-coded. It's very easy to follow. Usually when you get into the advanced analytics, you start to lose a little bit of interest, but he makes it very clear. We got red, yellow, and green. Red, bad. Yellow, in the middle. Green, good. Right? I think everybody understands that. But let's go ahead and grab a break and get into hour number two. Starting off hour number two is going to be my guy from Bluff City Media. That would be Christian Fowler. He's next.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Sakalitas, and make sure you check out his NBA draft guide. A lot of work went into it, and it's really good work. I mean, the advanced analytics, idea of having 60 different player evaluations, diving into those advanced analytics. If you are a sicko like Parker, like me, like Connor, make sure you dive into it and check it out.
It's also color-coded.
Yes, it's color-coded. It's very easy to follow. Usually when you get into the advanced analytics, you start to lose a little bit of interest, but he makes it very clear. We got red, yellow, and green. Red, bad. Yellow, in the middle. Green, good. Right? I think everybody understands that. But let's go ahead and grab a break and get into hour number two. Starting off hour number two is going to be my guy from Bluff City Media. That would be Christian Fowler. He's next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.